Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
It's an interesting world we're all living in so many ways. When you look at the hybrid cars, you know, you start to think, look, I have high-powered cars, a lot of them, from my old, from phenomenal, you know, 7-liter, 65 caddy convertible. That thing's a storm. Old technology, it stinks, but it's fast as a rocket for a big, fat car. Then I got a big, fat Mercedes, a 600S, a 12-cylinder. The thing is a rocket ship, 0-60 in 4.5. I have another, you know, I'm not going to hide it. I have a Ferrari. The thing is a rocket. I never drive it. It's got 1,600 miles on it after 2 years. Are Dennis Kucinich speaking now? Wait, let me finish this better than that loser. I don't know how he got up there, that homeless moron. Let me hear a minute of him.
In Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, nobody.
Turn it off. I heard enough already with him, that lunatic hysteric. He sounds like Frito. Wait, let me hear it again.
Hot war with Iran.
Now we have. Why does he sound like Frito in The Godfather? Play Frito. Play Frito if you can find it.
Send Frito playing. Off to do this. Send Frito off to do that. Let Frito take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart and I want to
take the gold. World
I
records.
Swear to you.
World records for violations.
Did I not pick up on a gestalt here? A verbal gestalt.
Inheritance and hollow out the economy. We cannot afford another.
Send Fredo off of this.
These companies took over health care. Wake up, America.
Send Fredo off to do this. Send Fredo off to do that.
Wake up, America.
Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere.
America, they want your social security. Wake up, America.
I can handle things. I'm smart.
Are being wake up,
like
America.
Everybody
we went into Iraq.
Like dumb. I'm smart.
War against Iran. Contract.
All right. Shut up. Get him out of here, boo. Give him the hook. They want to drill more into your wallet, you putz. The reason we want to drill more is to reduce the cost of oil, Schmendrick. What up? This is an idiot. But you got to admit that the mix between him and Dennis Kucinich and Frito was really good. It was one of the fine moments of radio. I really enjoyed that. Is he still talking? Let me hear more.
Just well, the cost of food, gasoline, and electricity
skyrocketed. Shut up. You don't look like
now
you're starving
have
to me.
Skillfully
get up. Get him off this. Yeah, take it. Tell your story, Walken Johnson. Get out of here. Let me hear. Just one more second. I can't resist. It's like drawing in the air on a tooth, like a filling that fell out. Let me hear one more.
I can handle things. I'm smart.
No,
like
Dennis Kucinich. Dennis.
Companies,
Dennis.
The insurance companies.
All right. He's anti-corporate. Yeah, how many corporations support this bum? I don't understand it because he has a very good-looking wife. That's the part that bothers me. What is it about women that they're attracted to weasels like him? I could never understand this. The guy is ugly. He's a psychopath. He's a left-winger. How he got him, I'll never understand this. But then, look, a lot of women look good, and inside they're insecure children. So what are you going to do? Maybe let's not go there. Let me not fantasize. I'm not interested in his sex life. Before I was so rudely interrupted by my own machinations here with Dennis Kucinich and Frito Corleone, I was saying that I have cars with big engines. Okay, it's my business. I pay for the gas. You don't. Okay, so don't lecture me about what I should be doing. And here's what I'm getting at. You idiots with these Toyota hybrids, at first you say, you know what? Hey, what's wrong with cutting down on emissions? No one likes emissions. It turns out that the batteries for these cars cannot be recycled in any way. They're going to wind up polluting the earth for as long as maybe 1,000 years. There's no way to recycle them right now. They have to create whole new dumps for the nickel batteries or whatever they're using in these Toyota hybrids. It came out in Australia that they cannot get rid of them. Did you hear what I just said to you? Can you believe this? Can you believe this story, what I just told to you? So the next time you see one of the self-righteous people driving around in a hybrid, sneering at you and cutting you off in the right lane, which they all do. I don't know what it is. Like, guys who are short have to start bar fights and let their big friends finish them. I don't understand it, but everyone with a hybrid is speedy. They're all in zippy cars. You know who the zippy cars are? The ugliest car on the road is this Honda Box. It is the ugliest car ever made. It looks like a clown car. I don't need to wait for the circus to arrive. Every time I see a guy in one of those cars with an Obama sticker, I start to laugh hysterically. But they're always driving faster than anyone on the road from the right lane to prove to you that although they're little, they can drive as fast as you. And there's only one – I mean, if you're competitive as I am, it gets to you after a while. So I usually step on the gas and blow them away, and they get so mad if you're faster than them. They're driving every lane, cutting everyone off. You step on the gas and zoom away from them, and they can't quite get in front of you in the left lane, and they go crazy here in the San Francisco area. They put their lights on. That's the liberal thing. They put the lights on, and they shake their head from left to right. No, 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 like they're affecting you. What's the lights on? I almost got killed when I did that in New York a long time ago. Did I ever tell you that story? It's not in the book. They don't understand reality, liberals. I'm not a violent man. I just laugh at them. But there are people who are crazy. They will kill you for simply cutting them off. They'll kill you just for flashing your lights at them. This is an amazing story that I'm glad isn't in the book. I had moved back to New York in the mid-'80s. I had to leave California. So I had forgotten the mores of a dangerous city. The naked city can strip you bare fast. San Francisco may be violent, but it's in certain pockets of the city. New York can be dangerous anywhere at any time and can come at you like a bee out of nowhere. One night, not late, 9 o'clock, I'm on the service road of the Grand Central Parkway. I don't know what it was, and the guy stops in front of me for no reason. It was a dark portion of the service road somewhere in Queens. He was going slow, or he stopped. I flashed my lights. I didn't scream. I didn't yell. I didn't honk. I gave it one flash, like, what are you doing? Then I go to pass him on the right, and he blocks the car, and the windows go down, and two of the most murderous faces I've ever seen in my life looked at me, and they didn't say one word. They were deciding whether to kill me. And it looked like, you know, looking back on it, a guardian angel saved my life because I had my kid in the car, and frankly, he was young. And they probably figured it isn't worth it, not that they had any compassion for the kid, but they figured that it looked to me like they just came from a murder, a butcher job somewhere. And I swear to God, I know afterwards, and it's happened to me a few times in my life where I've made an error. How did I know? What, a flash of a light is going to get you killed? And I learned something from that. The mere gesture in a car can get you killed. But the people in Marin County don't know that. The people in San Francisco don't know that. It's the, hey, hey, how, up yours, you're going to go. That's the crowd. Everyone is everyone they could give the finger to because they've never been pushed in their life, let alone punched in the nose. No one's ever pushed them back. Now, this goes to their worldview. The liberal does not understand, never mind the highway, they don't understand the world. They don't understand what Iran is. They don't understand what Russia is. They don't understand what China is. They don't understand that the freedom they have has come to them from rivers of blood of American men who have bled to death all over the world so that they can go with the middle finger to you from the right lane. They don't understand that it was the infantrymen in World War II who froze in a foxhole in the Herson Forest, that it was the bomber pilot over Schweinfurth whose plane was shot down after he dropped bombs on a ball bearing plant that has given them the freedom to give you the middle finger.
Savage.
People over 30 can't multitask. They can't multi-hear. They grew up doing one thing at a time. The younger generation can do multiple things at a time, but all wrong. They're able to multitask, but they do everything wrong. They can't write a letter correctly. They can't type correctly. Nothing. I never saw anything like it. People do everything wrong, no matter what you ask people to do today. They can't get anything right, particularly if they're under 50. They can't work. They don't want to work right. I was raised in a time when the work ethic was king. I mean, you had to work. You had to work, and you had to do a good job. It was an honor. It was a mark of a person's self-respect, dignity, manhood, to be a worker and a good one. That's how I was raised. It was drummed into me from early childhood. And then you wake up and you see children. They won't clean a boat. They won't clean a house. I mean, pay them. You can't find an American kid, a white kid, to do any kind of work. They won't clean a boat. They won't clean a house. They won't babysit. They won't walk a dog. They're a bunch of spoiled drug addicts. An entire generation of children raised to think that the world owes them a living. And they walk around with a snotty attitude that I don't know where it comes from. You know, look, I got to be harsh about this. I watch, you know, I largely live in the suburbs. I stay in the city part-time, and I move around through many locations for obvious reasons. But a lot of my time is spent in the safe white suburbs, so to speak. I mean, let's call it like what it is. No matter how liberal they say they are, they don't want anyone around them who doesn't look like them, even though they vote lib. That's the way they are. And you watch them in their child raising, and sometimes you have to shake your head. Whether it be a young mother who probably is on a prescription drug herself and all she's obsessed with is her abs, feeding her child a jelly donut and a cocoa in the morning on her way to school along with his Ritalin tablet, knowing nothing about diet and a child's behavior, nothing, and she doesn't want to know about it. All she wants to know is to get the brat into school so she can go have the affair or go to the exercise class for 4 hours. Whether it is a pair of white parents who are a little older than I was when I had my first child, taking a brat to a restaurant, 8, 8:30, 9, I shake my head. When do they stay home with them? When do they stay home? Don't they do homework? Isn't there a safe time to go to a restaurant where you don't have to listen to? And the crayons, fine dining around a kid with a crayon or a coloring book? I can't even digest when they pull out the Crayolas. Why are they in the restaurant with the child, with Crayolas, educating them? And they always do it to show how smart they are and the child is. Last night I went to a place. It was downscale Italian. I figured I could escape it, but no, it got worse. There was a father at an adjacent table. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. I had to take the food home. I had to leave. Now, he wasn't a bad guy, don't get me wrong. But I had to listen to an entire lesson. As the children are eating, he says to them, during the Cuban Missile Crisis of the 1960s, who was president? I'm not making this up. And the children have to repeat to the father, who was the attorney on the U.S. Supreme Court? And I'm trying to eat. I couldn't even get a piece of bread down my gullet. So as I say, I packed it up and left. What is this lesson at a dinner? Why do I have to hear it to understand you're a smart, liberal man? And you're intelligent and your children are as bright as you and they're going to learn to screw everyone around them when they grow up like you do for a living with your law degree? That's what you're telling me? That they're not going to be like the ordinary person, they're going to learn how to screw everybody just like daddy? Why do I have to hear this? Is there no hour when there are no children? Now look, I love children. I raise children. But at a certain point, it seems to me it's child abuse to have them in a restaurant. So I say to myself, don't they do homework anymore? I know they don't babysit. I know they don't wash a car or a boat for a buck. They don't do chores. Do they do homework? No, unless the homework is how to put a condom on a cucumber or how to learn how racist white people are or to learn that marijuana is healthy for you and tobacco. I mean, tobacco is bad for you. Marijuana is healthy for you. So is there no time of day? When I raised my children, if we went into a restaurant and the kids started to make any kind of noise, I immediately picked them up. And I went out of the restaurant, talked to them. I said, look, there were other people. And even if they didn't understand me, I said to them, you can't make noise in the restaurant. There are other people eating, and they want to have a nice dinner. So please, if we go back, you can't make noise. You can't make one of your famous cocktails out of the salt and the pepper and the ketchup and the mustard and the soy sauce and mix it and pass it around. No, you can't make that famous cocktail that you two like to pass around with each other because I'm liable to puke on the table. That's in the Chinese restaurants. They used to make a cocktail. Do you have any idea that that's the reason the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer? It was because of times like this. When you have a situation like we have today, that's why the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer. You know how the story goes, don't you? Well, I may as well tell it. It's as interesting as any. Having studied this for years, all of this stuff. Our theories, no one knows. I mean, the ancient Sumerians look like my uncles to me. I mean, I see the pictures, renderings of them. I guess I descend from Sumerians because they all look like my relatives. But the way the story goes is somebody ate some grain, some type of wheat dish or whatever in the area there, the Mediterranean basin. And they spat it out. I know it's disgusting. They didn't eat it all. I was like, ugh, this is disgusting. Again, another night of grain? I'm sick of grain. I don't care how healthy they are. I don't want it. I'm a pew. Ah! And they spit in the plate. But they were starving. Days later, they went back, and there was nothing to eat but the grain that they half-masticated and discarded in the plate. And the guy ate it. Ugh, disgusting. I ate this guy. And guess what? His wife didn't look like she had a mustache for the first time in 25 years. His ugly little children looked like he could deal with them without wanting to throw them out of the cave door. In other words, he got drunk. Why? Because the half-masticated grain matter that he spat up fermented in the cave during that period that it was sitting there, and it was produced some alcohol. And that's apparently one of the theories as to how alcoholic beverages, better known as adult beverages, developed in history. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I'm glad I could share this moment with you. Another moment in Savage history on the Savage Nation. It's actually probably, according to what I've read, true. And by the way, guess which culture? You're not going to believe this one. This is a real, you're talking about historical ironies. Take a guess which ancient peoples first developed wine from the grape. Buzz, answer. The same country that's now dominated by the invader from Turkey, Iran. In other words, the ancient Persians, allegedly, or it is thought historically, were the first viticulturalists on the planet. Well, take a look now. You got an invader from Turkey named Ahmadinejad, who was apparently, according to Iranians, is not even of Iranian descent. He's an invader. He's like a Hun. I mean, excuse me, like a barbarian invader. And he is the most anti-alcohol, anti-freedom guy in the history of Persia since King Haman. You hear this?
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above.
Only positive music on the Savage Nation. Listener called, very upset that I'm negative. We'll do the how to win friends and influence people for a variety.
Life could be a dream. If only all my precious plans would come true. If you would let me spend my whole
thank you, life. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Things are coming up roses. Everything's good. Things are wonderful. Bush is a conservative. This is the best election in American history. Things are going to get better. Everything's coming up roses. We've got tomorrow to look forward to. Tomorrow will be better. And beyond that, there will even be a better tomorrow. Our leaders think only of the people on a daily basis. There's not a quisling amongst them. The only quislings are in talk radio and in the media. Why the good people run things. They are in public service because they want to sacrifice for the people. They do it specifically because they're such good people. They've sacrificed private careers specifically so the little people can rest and sleep well at night. The Chinese don't mean any war. All of these interchanges between submarines and ships and missiles and things of that nature are simple misunderstandings. The Chinese military wants only peace with America. And our best friends, as you well know, are the Saudi Arabians. They have little religious schools around America and the world where this Wahhabist sect teaches peace and love towards the non-Muslim. Everything's coming up roses, you see. Things are good. Everything's fine. America's a great country. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow will be better and better and better. Your children will do slightly better than you, and their children will do better than them. And the world will live in peace and harmony. Global warming will be solved. World hunger will be solved. Sexual liberation will be resolved. Everybody will be happy. We'll have a woman president. Then we'll have a black president. Then we'll have a gay woman black president. And then the world will even be better and better and better as long as we can continue to get rid of this negativity. Al, welcome to the Savage Nation on WOR. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Mike. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Did you like my homily on things are getting better?
That, you are the best, sir. I definitely want to thank you for your contributions to radio.
You know, but you see, Al, here's the problem. I think you have to be a cynical New Yorker like you to even understand me. I'm starting to think that people don't even understand sarcasm and such in this world.
Yeah, I want to say thank you. I am respectful, and I am thankful for your contributions to radio and American airwaves. You tell it like it is. And most importantly, I think like the caller that was there before wanting, or I should say callers who wanted all those positive messages,
yes.
I think they're not ready. Most of the American public is not ready for the bitter medicine that the doctor is dispensing. They're just not ready.
Well, I don't sugarcoat the message. That's true.
You know, the problem is,
I mean, when I get up in the morning and I read that Bush wants twice the funding for AIDS in Africa, and the guy is like an insane asylum. He's like an insane asylum with pants. The country's bankrupt or going broke. The guy's printing money like there's no tomorrow. What is he, nuts? Where is the $30 billion going to come from, I ask myself?
Yeah, that's the thing, that everybody in America, I mean, some people in America just don't want to look at the truth, and they don't want to do, see, what you do on radio is you wax philosophical and do some self-analysis, and that's what unfortunately too many Americans don't do with themselves.
Oh, you mean the self-analysis is very difficult to do. It's a lifetime of training which permits me to analyze self and still function in the present. It's not easy to do. I got to tell you, Al, it's pretty risky. No, most people are afraid to look within. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
looked within and I don't want to tell you, deceive you into thinking everything I see is so wonderful. You know, it is what it is. That's all. I am what I am. And I have to take myself as I am made, not as I wish I were. But Bush wants twice the funding for AIDS. This is amazing to me. CIA claims hackers have broken into power systems computers and threatened to cut off electricity to entire cities unless they're paid a ransom. That's the CIA. You could say it's a scare tactic, or you could say it's probably true. Muslim opening prayer at Iowa State House sets off alarm bells when somebody actually heard what he said in Arabic. Is that racism if somebody actually analyzed what the Muslim imam said? Of course it isn't. It's called a reasonable concern with a suspicious imam such as this. Report, North Korea to sell mini-subs to Iran. Shall I look at that in a positive manner? So show me the positive in that story. Let us give you another story that I put up on the website. Soros Nation, hedge fund operator controlling Democratic politicians and the media. Is there something positive in that? Hypothetical attack on the United States outlined by China in their military textbooks. Is there something positive in that I've missed? Homeowners ordered to cut down redwoods because the trees blocked their neighbor's solar panel. Is there something positive in that? Illinois Democrats close to Barack Obama are saying he will appoint the shyster con man lawyer, John Edwards, to be the Attorney General of the United States should he, by God forsake us all, should he become president. Can you imagine this? Could you imagine the irony of a shyster lawyer like Edwards becoming Attorney General? Can you imagine that? That would be like Al Sharpton becoming head of the Department of Education. That would be like, I can go down the list. I don't even want to make, you know, jokes about this. What else do you want to talk about? I mean, there's a lot of topics. You want fun. I know that. You want me to do cars and stuff like that. You know, I don't want to do it. What do you want to do? Bush and AIDS? Boring. See, I take chances. I got a full board. Everyone's on the line. And we can talk about these topics. Did you know I interviewed Sylvester Stallone? It was a great interview. Naturally, the snot-nosed reviewers who know nothing didn't like it. It wasn't artistic enough. It wasn't like Brokeback Mountain. It didn't have any nuance. It didn't have any sensitivity. It didn't have any sensitive male figures who sleep with each other in a haystack. It was a little too macho, too shoot 'em up. Just tough guys shooting evil men. It didn't appeal to the reviewers and the newspapers. They didn't like it. That means it'll be a smash hit. They didn't show a character naked taking Ambien, dying in a bed because he was too sensitive for the world. That's what they want to see. Turn a man into a pocketbook so a woman can carry him around in a nightclub. Okay, then the staff case is in the Castro District. John Bolton, we played him already. He's looking for a job. A guy like him probably wish he had a talk radio show like mine. They all do. What do you think they want? If they're honest, they can't be a lobbyist. So if they're an honest ex-politician, where are they going to turn? What kind of job can they get? They could teach, but there's not enough money in that, and there's no real interest in teaching because it's like there's no money and there's no nothing. So what do they want to do? They want to get in the media. They want to be like a contributor to a television show for very little money. I don't know how you can go from green room to green room with makeup and coffee and styrofoam cups and bad donuts and then sit before a guy with pancake makeup who just had a few pints. I don't know how you can take it. But look, you got to make a buck. Whatever happened to the green room generals? Where are they now that we don't need them? What are they doing? There was a time when the green room generals were everywhere. That's a tough one. Peter Piper picked a pack of pickle peppers. Remember those days when you had to do those things to see if you could do it when you were a kid, and if you failed, you got pummeled? Huh. I grew up with kids really picked on each other. That's what made everybody smarter. And if you fell by the wayside, you became a reporter. Los Angeles, California. Corin, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I love your negativity because it's not negativity, it's honesty. And if that person doesn't like it, let them listen to another show.
Yeah, but that's because you're from L.A. It's like people from certain cities like me. But by and large, I think it's like it's a certain attitude. It's very hard to explain. You live in L.A. where people are very, like, ironic, sarcastic, right? I mean, you see irony and sarcasm. Well, you hear it every day, don't you?
Yeah.
All right, so you relate to irony and sarcasm. But like a person from Iowa, for example, they would consider that to be un-American and anti-Christian to be ironic and sarcastic.
I don't think so, Savage. I think it's that one stupid person. They probably were switching channels by mistake.
I don't know.
Come on.
Where do you live in L.A.? Like, give me an idea. I don't want to know exactly everything about your life. I need a mind picture right now. Where? What part
of L.A.? Just
you got snow in the mountaintops up there in the San Gabriels?
Yeah.
Isn't it pretty? Isn't it beautiful to see snow in the San Gabriel Mountains?
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is. What are people complaining about? What are they complaining that it's raining and snowing? This is what it proves. Al Gore's a schmuck and a liar. Look, if you had a winter in L.A. with a drought, everything was burning and like 90 degrees every day in the reservoir and the everything was dry and there was no snow in the San Gabriels, you could say, maybe there's something to it. How could these schmucks get away with this? We have a wet winter, a snowy winter, blizzard conditions, and this moron's running around to Davos with the drug addicts there telling there's global warming, more money. I was right. I'm more right than ever. He knows he's a liar.
It's all insane. That's why you're so great. So just stay the way you are. Don't.
Thank you. I will. I have no choice. I thought about that. It's like I actually make sanity out of an insane world. I was trying to think that if you had to define what you actually do for people to listen, in every city, there's like 70, 80 radio stations, and God knows what choices people. What? Oh, it's talking to me again, the computer? My only friend is the computer. My dog doesn't even talk. The computer does. I look forward to it saying, "You've got mail." Actually, wait. It's a great thing every day. The computer says, "You've got mail." I run downstairs to see. What was I thinking? Oh, it's like making sense. I was thinking like, okay, when I started radio in San Francisco, there were 72 radio stations. There wasn't even an internet in 94, really. Do you know that? I had to go buy newspapers and magazines to do a radio show. Heavy newspapers and magazines in order to do a radio. So, in other words, people had a lot of choices then. Now they have an infinite number of choices in the media, correct? Between the Blackberries and what you can get on a telephone and your earring and your filling. It's unbelievable. So why do people listen to the show? You say, well, oh, yeah, it's on the way out, right? Talk radio is dead. Well, my friend, like Mark Twain said, my friends, don't count me out yet. For example, in New York City on WOR, I smashed the other station. Take a look at the hours. They're on my website. I didn't invent them. They're from Arbitron. In San Francisco on KNEW, I'm a giant hit. I'm number one amongst talkers. I smashed the wall banger in amongst persons 25 to 54. Among men 18 plus on KNEW in San Francisco, the show is a huge hit. So people are still listening to the radio. They're still listening to Michael Savage. In fact, more than ever. So what I'm getting at, without blowing my horn a little too much, is why? With all these choices, why are they tuning into the show? There's a lot of reasons, but, you know, if you analyze them all, the sarcasm, the irony, the humor, these are all techniques. They're not the show. They're techniques. But above it all is I basically take the insanity of the world we are living in, the disintegration of our country as a result of corruption and immigration primarily. The disintegration of our country is a result of corruption and immigration, and the out-of-control immigration is a result of political corruption. So when you trace it all back, it's political corruption that is destroying America. And that's why the Anglo-American enterprise, the Anglo-American control of the world is coming to an end. It's because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, as it was said a long time ago by Lord Acton. And the Bush family, the Bush dynasty, and the Clinton dynasty, which I said first, Clinton Bush, Bush Clinton, Clinton Bush, Bush Clinton, I said it first 2 years ago, and it's become like a mantra now amongst the pundits, is frankly a very bad sign for this country. We are not a monarchy. We don't believe in a monarchy. I'll be back. Savage. I am now going to define for you the difference between Republicans and conservatives. You see, right now there are voices on the radio who call themselves conservatives who are propagandizing the airwaves. That's all they're doing, is they're propagandists. You can hear, for example, the golfer defending high gas prices as a necessary part of the free market. You can hear the golfer bellowing that there shouldn't be an FDA to protect us from salmonella. You can hear the golfer pontificate that illegal aliens are just doing the jobs Americans won't do. You can hear the golfer flying around in his Gulfstream attacking the minimum wage as being anti-job. Now, this is pure rubbish. People like him are globalist liberals masquerading as free marketeers. They themselves are free marketeers, by the way. And many people who listen to these people have drunk the golfer's Kool-Aid. More importantly, while they may be Republicans, they are most definitely not conservatives. And I've said this to you time and time again on the radio show you're listening to. Michael Savage is a conservative, not a Republican. There's a huge difference between the two. For example, Republicans offer AIDS money to Africa. Look what Bush has been doing, pumping billions and billions of tax dollars to a foreign nation to treat AIDS when most of the money is being stolen and not used for AIDS, by the way. Well, conservatives offer aid to working Americans, not aid for Africa. Republicans are for letting the free market decide that $5 a gallon gas is okay, while conservatives are for compelling foreign oil producers to increase production and reduce prices using force if necessary. That's what our military is for, to protect the national interest. That's what it's for. We're not using it, are we? That's because we are run by Republicans, not conservatives. Republicans are for bailing out billionaire money manipulators on Wall Street while you wait online at the hospital behind an illegal alien in the emergency room. Conservatives are for letting Wall Street hucksters pay for their own mistakes and sending the illegals back to Mexico. Republicans are for letting market forces decide if your food has fecal matter in it, while conservatives are for enforcing basic food safety standards so that Mexican farm workers can't crap in the fields and make you sick. Republicans think bringing in illegal aliens is amnesty. Conservatives think bringing in illegal aliens is a travesty. Republicans want a strong global economy. Conservatives want a strong country. Republicans think that child porn on the internet is freedom from government. Conservatives know that smut is a poison that must be snuffed out. America thought Bush was a conservative. He turned out to be just a Republican. And while there are Republicans who are conservatives as well, please don't let the R after the name fool you. Let the voter and the listener beware. I'm Michael Savage. I approve of this monologue. Play Roll Out the Barrel, please, as we roll into the second gear on the Savage Nation. play John McCain on Beer.
If that authority is entrusted to me, I will use the veto as needed. I will veto every single bill with earmarks.
Oh, God. Well, as I said, at least he isn't going to veto my beer.
Savage.
That a former CIA agent would discuss these kinds of things, because once you describe what techniques are being used, and they are far less serious and threatening than techniques we use on Marines and pilots who go through our training, then the high-value detainees will never speak to us.
See the damage that Barbara Boxer, Jane Harmon, and the Democrats are doing to our ability to win the war on terror? Our own men are subjected to tougher techniques than waterboarding, but that doesn't concern them. Now, Phil Newmark is the board operator for this show, and he has just volunteered to go on record right now saying he would be subjected to waterboarding right on this program to show you that it's not torture. Phil, is that right? Come on the air.
Yes, sir. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Phil, do you have any military experience?
None whatsoever.
And you're still not afraid of waterboarding. You know what it is?
I know exactly what it is. I've seen it in movies. I've seen Code Pink do it. I'm more than willing to step up and experience it firsthand before, you know, I make any judgments on it.
All right. But you're willing to be waterboarded live on the air on the Savage Nation sometime in the future. We'll have to get somebody from the CIA to do it, or somebody who knows how to waterboard you. Would you rather be waterboarded for 30 seconds or eat Jane Harmon's ravioli?
Oh, it would definitely be the waterboarding, sir.
Would you rather be waterboarded or be in the same room with Barbara Boxer after a family argument?
I'm going to have to ask to be waterboarded twice.
And the last question, would you rather be waterboarded or eat Nancy Pelosi's tortellini?
You put a bullet in my head before I'll eat that tortellini.
All right, we're on record, Phil. We'll have to find somebody willing to waterboard you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
You know what? I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Pretending. Oh, the bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker. The bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Ooh.
Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone.
Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and, the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy and everyone else is happy and you're the only one who's feeling lonely or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else. And you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee and it. And the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, you know, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good. And maybe it is for you. You know, maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind. Life is a bore and life is difficult and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hell. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care. If we gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. Then you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations. The most. Someone who actually believed in the Word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that, you know, is the way to go. You know, what I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things, exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray, you got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What, are you going to kill yourself? So the government keeps promising you stuff they can't deliver in order to hypnotize you like Obama and Hillary and Edwards. All they would do was hypnotizing the schmuck out there that George Bush is mean, the Republicans are evil, and if they're elected, they're going to make you happier because they're going to give you free prescription drugs. Well, okay, but you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in Obama or Hillary Clinton. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there are people who are younger than me who can't do radio. But my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? that when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm
talking about. He hunts the biggest of all game. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
Turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? 1-800-449. Jesse Jackson warns of harm to parties. Look who's talking. A real halo. This just came out on Judge. Jesse Jackson warns of irreparable harm to party. Here's a guy who wrecked the Democrat Party with his racial divide and hatred and his bunko, him and the other one. Him and the other one with the white collar. No one knows where he went to divinity school. Jesse High Jackson. The Democrats. He's advising them how to run the party now. Oh, great. 1-800-419-8255. MichaelSavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in Ding Dong School the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby, I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host to imagine doing his own daughter and the son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest a Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel? Oh, he doesn't feel like you want him to feel? You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Here, right away, Obama would break down the Marine training or the Special Forces training, saying it's a little too rough, okay? Now you understand where we're at? When we have Marines who actually are trained to hunt and kill and go out and hunt and kill like they've been trained to do as kids, and that's why they're tough enough to go into the U.S. Marines, and they do the job they were trained to do, what happens? Some puke wearing a uniform, who's really a lawyer, who's too stupid to get a job in civilian life, goes after the kid who does his job. That's where I'm concerned about my country. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So what does the mosque mask? I realize we're not prepared for this question yet. I suppose an entire city has to go up in smoke before we, the American moron, is permitted to even say, well, do you think we ought to really check out the mosques or the freedom of religion? Listen, you schmuck, it's the Islamic fanatic world against your life. They are here, they are everywhere, and they want to kill you or convert you. Oh, I know that not all Muslims are terrorists. We have discussed that, so don't accuse me of attacking all Muslims. The problem is, and here's your conundrum. Here's your little conundrum. How are you going to root out the Hezbollah and the Hamas supporters in your local mosque from the law-abiding Muslim? I'll let you figure that one out. Now, the reason Israel is in trouble right now is because they're fighting a war they cannot win. Israel cannot find them. Why can't they find them? Because the Arabs are famous for hiding amongst women and children. They've been doing it in the West Bank and in Gaza for about 50 years. Yes, some of them function out of caves. The rest of them function out of apartment houses, use their children and their women and their mothers and their grandmothers as human shields. And that is exactly why you are seeing devastating civilian deaths in Lebanon. It's a tragedy. It's horrendous. You cannot distinguish them from the guerrilla fighters. The fact of the matter is, if you go into the Hezbollah offices in the southern suburbs where Israel is trying to root them out, you are going to find that families live in their military headquarters. Families live in their political headquarters. They bunch apartments together, distinguishing not between civilians and those who plan death and destruction for the Jews. Therefore, I'll let you play the chess game out. The chess game is going to end in greater human tragedy than any of us can imagine. The problem is, how do we keep the Hezbollahites and the Hamasniks here in America from killing you? That's the number one question of the day. The loudest voices right now against Israel in America are Hezbollah operatives. That is correct. So be very careful what you believe and what you hear. Now, I want to tell you this. You know that I have backed the Pendleton 8 from the beginning. Our boys are unfairly being given the possibility of a death sentence for having gone to war in Iraq under the command of their captains and their lieutenants and their generals, and having gotten into a firefight and having killed people by accident, meaning civilians. Don't you understand? The very same situation that the Israelis are facing, where the rats, the vermin, hide amongst their women and children. Our boys faced in Iraq, and now they're facing a death sentence in Camp Pendleton, and the top brass in the Marines should know better. But they're crucifying these young men. Crucifying these young men, accusing them of having killed innocent civilians. You go distinguish between an innocent civilian and someone who just killed your best friend after a firefight. They couldn't do it, but you telling them they should have been able to do it, you idiots? How dare they persecute these men? These men should be released immediately, and they should be given a Medal of Honor for what they put up with. That's number one. Now let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Fort Worth, Texas. Ron, you're up in the Savage Nation.
The term you use, the American moron. I've been saying that forever. I'm so glad you heard it. Need to hear it about every 5 minutes.
Here's the problem. Let me tell you something. The lesbian, feminist, homosexual cabal in America has for 50 years, with their liberal communist cronies, beaten the hell out of the American male that could stand up to the Hezbollahites in this country. They have beaten masculinity to death. They have rolled over the hatred and the anger that is natural to the human condition. They have only let the hatred and anger fester amongst these scumbags in our country, who have come in under the guise of asylum. They're filled with hate. These vermin are filled with hate. They cut your throat. They throw your daughter down a well and laugh while chanting to Allah. But you're not allowed to say it. You're not allowed to have any hatred. You're not allowed to have any anger. Only they can have hatred and anger. I warn you, only hatred and anger can save this country. And I stand by those words. You must crucify your enemy verbally first. You must reduce your enemy to rubble verbally and psychologically first. They have done it to you. They have mocked you. They have called you animals. They've called you rats. They've called you mice. You have any idea what they say about you behind closed doors? I can guarantee you it's not what nice Americans for having taken us in and put us on welfare. I guarantee you they spit on your face. They spit on the American flag for having been so stupid as to let them creep in amongst you like spiders and rats. The fact of the matter is, in every war that we have been in, there have been propaganda campaigns against the enemy. In World War I, propaganda cartoons painted the of the Japanese and the Germans. Why do you think those propaganda campaigns were permitted? It was to harden our men to the battles ahead. It was to dehumanize the enemy so that our men would not have the hesitation to pull the trigger when they were facing them. because the man who hesitates when guns are facing each other is the man who dies. And if our boys have been deballed, and if our boys have been defanged, and if our boys have been told to love thy enemy, we're finished.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
You notice there's a campaign in the media to say the Republicans lost in the last election because they were too conservative. They lost because they weren't inclusive. They lost because they are only reaching out to the older, white, rural voter. Nothing could be farther from the truth. The exact opposite is true. Colin Powell is a liar. Colin Powell is a Quisling. Colin Powell is a Democrat. Colin Powell was trying to get a job with Obama. The fact of the matter is the reason the Republicans lost is because they weren't conservative enough. The reason the Republicans lost is because they ran too far to the left. The reason the Republicans lost is because they ran that stooge John McCain, who, by the way, would have been more liberal than Obama. The only way the Republican Party could ever have a resurgence is to go back to the conservative values that gave them their revolution in 1994. And I mean even more to the right than Ronald Reagan. I mean going back to Barry Goldwater Republicanism by appealing to the borders, language, culture basis for the Republican Party. They can survive and thrive. If they continue to try to be Democrat light, they're as extinct as John McCain. I told you I went on vacation against my will 2 weeks ago, right? And I said I don't want to go on another vacation. What got into me, I don't know. I booked another vacation today for next week. I don't know how I do these things. It's the family, because you want to be with family. So I'm willing to suffer already, you know, with the telephones and the booking and the nervous, the seats. Does it recline enough? And then there's a new site now that you can go on and actually look at your airline seat. I forget, SiteZip or whatever. Everything's on the internet. I actually see the type of seat I'm going to sit in. I picked my airliner, a 767-300, which has semi-reclining seats. But since it's on American Airlines, they suck. And it's in reader comments. It's unbelievable what you can get on the internet today. I knew it was no good with American. They also complain about the crew coming out of San Francisco, the most hostile, venal crew in the world. Serve San Francisco. Ooh, are they miserable. You know what first class is on American Airlines? It means bring a box lunch. You know what economy class is on American? Bring a porta potty. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. Here's the way to do this. It's like, if you know what to expect in advance, you can tolerate almost anything. That's why death is such a problem. It's because nobody can tell you exactly what it's like and exactly what to expect and what to pack. So you don't know how to deal with it. That's up to God already. That's where he holds the last card on that one. So it keeps us in line. You know what I'm saying? No one comes back and says, look, here's the thing. Don't bring a toothbrush. It's not going to be any value. Or, you know, do bring your pillow because there's a few thousand years that you wait. You're in the waiting room. You may as well be comfortable. There's no way to know. It disturbs us because we're rational beings. We want answers to every question. But with regard to American Airlines, you can pretty much know what to expect and what not to expect, which is nothing. The way I look at commercial flights today is if it gets me there safely, it's a super 100% success. I expect nothing. I told you last time I flew to Miami. The worst, it's like a deadhead flight. It's a nightmare. SFO to MIA, the worst flight in America. It's all of the special characters from Polk Street and the Castro District going to South Beach for the holidays. And, oh, my God, and they all worked those flight. Ma, woo, arrogance, hostility. You don't ask for water at the risk of being taped. You ask for water too strongly, they call out the tape squad. They have the MIA police waiting for you. You bring a box lunch, even first class. Because the last time I went, you know, you upgrade, it's in first class, whatever, first class. No such thing in commercial airlines, first class. So I go there, I sit in the last row. I'm waiting for lunch. She says, I'm sorry, there's no lunch in the last row. What? We have only a sandwich. I said, what are you talking about? So what we serve from the front to the rear going east. I said, how would I have known that? She said, I'm sorry, sir. That's the way we do it. All right, give me this peanut butter sandwich. Coming back, I figured, all right, it's not going to happen to me. I sit in the first row. I got booked the first. coming back. The same thing, she starts in the back. Sometimes she gets to me, she only has a sandwich. I said, what are you doing? I'm starving. I'm sorry, sir. Going west, we start serving from the rear going forward. There's only a peanut butter sandwich left. I swear to God, I am not making this up. So I've learned, you always go to an airport full. You eat in the, you eat at home, and then you eat at the airport, and then you buy a lunch on top of it all. That's because you're getting nothing, no matter what class of service you're in on American. Then you're free. What, I need the linen? I need the fork to feel rich? I don't need any of it. Just leave me alone, okay? I don't even ask him for a drink, because you know it's going to be subpar. Whatever you ask him for, they're doing you a favor. The wine you could puke from, it's cheaper than a wine in a San Francisco restaurant by the glass. I don't have to tell you what that is. They're cutting it from 3 ounces now to like 2 1/4. $22 a glass of wine. I swear to God, they rip you off now. I swear to you. Take a look at single glass wine prices in restaurants in San Francisco, ranging from $9 for 3 ounces, which they give you 2 1/4, all the way up to $22 a glass. Some people have the nerve. You talk about robbery. I've never seen anything like this. How they get away with it, I don't know. But anyway, that's the story. So you don't need to drink. You know, do what your mother said. Take Librium better. My mother's day, you know what the tranquilizer was in those days for women who were nervous? Was Librium in those days. Miltown and Librium. They were the tranks of the day. 2 milligrams of Miltown with a little rosé wine after class was pretty good, I got to tell you. Woo. All kids expire. They go in their mothers, you know, they get home. What are you studying? I'm studying comparative anatomy. Don't bother me. I'm in the bedroom with a disarticulated skull. My skull is disarticulated from your Milltown, man, and a glass of wine. Well, I'm glad you're studying anatomy in there. Very nice. What are you going to be one day? I don't know. Maybe a mass murderer. But just don't open the door with every parent's fear. You know, you don't know. But they used Milltown, Librium in those days. Then they got much stronger tranquilizers. Like 2 milligrams of Milltown, you don't even feel. Takes the edge off a bad marriage. That's why the doctors prescribed it in the 50s. How do you think your mother and father stayed together so long? They were stoned all the time. You think they would have lasted that long without medication? No, my father wouldn't touch a thing. He was stoic. Nothing. Didn't believe in anything. He had like a drink on holidays. I don't know how these guys did it. You talk about getting through life cold, white knuckle. The guy drank on holidays. That was it. Anyone who drank other than on a holiday was a drunk to him. He died at 50-something. Okay, I mean, you know, it probably would have been better if he knocked down a few drinks every night. What do I know? What I study, definitely. Two, small amount every night. 2 to 3, 2 to 3, 4, whatever. There used to be a discussion of what moderate drinking meant. It was cultural. It was a cultural thing. In America, moderate drinking meant one drink a night. That's so old maidish, you know. What do you mean moderate? Why even bother? One drink a night. I'll have my, just like an old age home, I'll have my drink and I sit shaking with your drink. The British medical establishment was like cool on that. Moderate meant 1 to 5 ounces of alcohol a night. That I like. They probably modified it already too since the arrival of their friends from the Middle East.
Savage.
Kentucky. Adam, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, you're absolutely right about the repo business. That's what I do. We've been doing about 50% above normal since last September.
You're a repo man, and it is a good business.
Oh, yes, sir.
What kind of items are you repossessing?
Well, right now we're sticking to pickup trucks and semi-trucks with the fuel prices. I couldn't tell you how many trucks I've...
But are the people basically just abandoning payments and saying, take it back? Is that it?
That's what they're doing, and usually they're doing that in order to save their house from going back.
Oh, that's sad. That's terrible. That is just terrible. The people are just that close to the edge. That's a horrible thing. So what do you do with a repossessed truck? Where does it go?
Well, different states have different laws, but most states state that it must go to auction and get a certain number of bids before it's sold. But
who buys them? I mean, if the trucks are no longer in favor, who buys them?
Well, right now you're getting trucks dirt cheap. Usually they end up on other car lots.
So, in other words, people are still buying the trucks, but they're buying them for like 50 cents on the dollar or something like that.
Yes, sir, that's right.
Maybe I should buy a truck. I don't really need one. I'll look into it. probably a good time to buy one. I got it. I mean, I got gas guzzlers. Every kind. I kind of think about it. I got very heavy fuel consuming cars, but I pay for it. It's not your business. What's your business if I pay for the gas? I don't understand it. If I'm willing to pay all this money per gallon, I mean, I don't like it. I wish the car got 100 miles to a gallon, but it doesn't. If it's a high, I'd love to have a. If you can get me a sun car, a car that runs on like the sun's energy and it can go as fast as my car does from 20 to 100, I'll take it. Will it make the same sounds coming out of the tailpipe? I wonder. That is something to behold. 20 to 100 is quite a speed on a car. I grew up in another era. I like gas guzzlers. Not because I like them to guzzle gas. I like what they do. I like their sound. I like their heft and feel. I like the safety of a big car. I hate little cars. I've always hated little cars. Never enjoyed them. Truthfully, I just like a big car. I'm driving the Navigator again. I kept it in a garage for a while. I enjoy it. It's big. Because you touch a curb, whoop! The light, it has a computer. Your right tire is deflated. It went down by 2 pounds. Call Stuttgart. Hello, Hans. My tire is losing air. This car, you could jump a curb and hit a hydrant, and the thing keeps rolling. Plus, I guarantee you, with my big Navigator, nobody in the Prius, they think twice. They look at it. You could see them trying to angle and cut you off from the right. Then they look at my eyes in the rearview mirror, and they see the size of the tire spinning by their head. And you see them just at the last minute. They say, well, maybe I shouldn't cut that guy off. There's something to be said for a big American car. Maybe I'll go look for a new one at half price now. I don't know what's going to be left after this is all over. All of our big cars are gone. God only knows what's going to happen to the boating market. Mwah! You wouldn't want to be a boat dealer with a... you know, twin 1,000-horsepower Caterpillars right now for sale, would you? With an 07 still on the lot, so to speak. Yeah, special deal. We got 2,000-horsepower Caterpillar engines in there that only burn 70 GPH, so 70 gallons per hour. Real bargain. No, I tell you, my boat has Cummins diesels, and I'm lucky. They're really good. I get about 10 or 11 gallons per hour. That's a very good fuel-efficient boat for a boat that's 19 tons. First of all, I don't go fast. What do I need to speed in a boat for? If I want a speedboat, I'll buy a speedboat. This is not a speedboat. It's a 19-ton cruiser. So I do 10 knots, 11 knots. I put it on autopilot. I go out with the dog when I do on a calm day, and I eat a sandwich on the foredeck. What is wrong with that? Am I hurting somebody? I'm personally offending you, the kayaker? How'd you get your kayak to the water's edge, schmuck? You drove it in a car, usually on an SUV, and then you get on the water and you act like you're holier than me. You think you're Nanook of the North. So I'm supposed to believe you came down from the Aleutian Islands personally in your kayak and that you're treading lightly on the ocean. That's what they play, or these bicyclists here on these two-lane roads. I don't know why the CHP, the California Highway Patrol, doesn't arrest these bicyclists. They're such asses. They're jackasses of the lowest order. And I ride a bike every day. But believe me, I don't cut cars off. I don't hog the road. You see these jerks, most of whom are lawyers from San Francisco. They like to show you their keister. They ride right next to you, and they won't pull over you. It's a two-lane road. And if you try to pass them, they give you the finger. Oh, I had a doozy last week. A couple, a man and a woman blocking the entire road, left and right. So I went around them. I went in the other lane. They got so mad that I had the nerve to go in the other lane, and I didn't get blocked by them. They went furious. You think they're doing this by accident, these asses, these jackasses? If I were a CHP officer, I'd arrest them and take their bicycles away and put them in prison for 30 days. You know, I am so fed up with these fraudulent environmentalists on bicycles and kayaks, I don't know where to begin. Savage. WOR, New York City. Steve, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, you're being too hard on President Bush, and I'll tell you why. If you're like me and you know some people who've been involved with the Joint Terrorism Task Force from 9/11 on, from Bush down, the single-minded focus is to prevent a horrible catastrophe going on in this country. And I'm talking about nuclear weapons. And the worst thing...
Hold on. That's too much for me. You are alleging that our Department of Homeland Security stopped a nuclear attack in America. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying they've stopped it, but I'm saying they play down the threat And I think President Bush deserves...
Well, hold on. No. I want to go back to that grandiose statement you just made. You're alleging that the Bush administration has actually prevented a nuclear attack on America. I'd like to know where the evidence is. I would love to know that.
You are misstating what I said. Their concern is that it happens. I didn't say that they've prevented an attack, but I think the threat is real. I think they play it down publicly. But I think President Bush, I think he deserves more credit than he gets. Now, maybe to the point where he's become diverted from other things.
Hold on now. Why would he go to a religious forum at the UN run by Saudi Arabia when they're a racist, anti-other-faith nation? How do you explain that?
You know, Mike, we can pick apart the moral relativism of any president. I'm not happy with it, but think about it.
Oh, now you're not happy with it. Do you think he has to go to this? Why does he have to go to this?
I'm not happy with it, Mike, but I got to tell you this. President Bush, more than any other president, understands the threat of Islamic terrorism, and he's the only one to do something about it.
Is that right? Then how come he's just directed the FBI to drop the phrase Islamofascism? In fact, to stop using the phrase Islamic with regard to terrorism at all. He just did that last week. Are you aware of that?
I don't have a problem with him doing that, because if you remember when the Abu Ghraib scandal hit... And
see, you are a front man for the Bush administration. You have no problem with anything he does. Because you work for a government agency.
No, I'm an average guy from New York, just like you, Mike.
Why are you so tied to the Bush skirts, then? Why can he not be Why can he not be criticized when he's perhaps the worst president in American history?
I don't think he is, Mike. I respectfully disagree.
I know he is, and that's why we have the next worst president in American history waiting in the wings. The reason we have an Obama, who is an inexperienced charlatan, as president of the United States coming to power January 20th, 2009, is because of George Bush's ineptitudes and insanities. That's the only reason we have Obama. What do you think, America's in love with this fraud?
Why don't we let history judge, Mike?
Again! Here we go again, Mr. Benevolent. So now you love Obama as well?
No, because he doesn't understand the threat. President Bush does, and I'll tell you how I know that, Mike, and you'll agree with me. When those pictures from Abu Ghraib came out with the prisoners naked, with the dogs barking on them, I said to myself, that comes right out of a textbook on how to deal with Islamic terrorists who don't even value their own lives. And we call that, some people call that torture. Well, let me tell you, John McCain would have preferred...
Well, hold on. You're getting way off the track. Where does George Bush fit in on all of this?
You don't think he had something to do with authorizing the way they dealt with detainees in Iraq and at Guantanamo? Absolutely. How do you deal with a prisoner who wouldn't respond to physical torture, wouldn't respond...
Well, now you're changing the argument. We all agree that they have been treated too nicely. We all agree that the exposure of the photos from Abu Ghraib were run by the radical left in this country with their Islamic buddies releasing those photographs. We understand that they have destroyed us and our ability to fight the war on terror effectively. But I totally disagree with you when you say or allege that the government has stopped a nuclear attack on America. I don't believe that's true.
I never said that, Mike. What I'm saying is that is a real, legitimate concern.
All right, you're a Bushy. I understand that. You'll have a portrait of him forever on your mantle.
I'm not a Bushy. I voted for Democrats and Republicans. I look more towards the person. And you may not like him. You may think he's the worst, but the impression I've gotten is, you know, they all lie, Mike, but he seems more sincere to me than anyone we've had in recent...
Of course, but there are degrees of lying. There are degrees of incompetence. There are degrees of inarticulateness, and there are degrees of nightmares produced by presidents. This man ranks amongst the highest.
I disagree, Mike. I think after a couple of
years... No, I'll tell you what. I know I'm right, and I know you won't agree with me, but my proof is that Obama, a complete charlatan without any experience whatsoever, was elected completely as a reaction to George Bush, not because the people loved Obama so much. They wanted anything but... George Bush. They wanted anyone who reminded them of anything but George Bush. That's why McShane got defeated.
Mike.
Now you're going to tell me you love John McCain next.
No. A sign of wisdom is being able to admit you're wrong, and I know you have wisdom, Mike. Give it a couple
of years. Bro, so why don't you start by showing a sign of wisdom? Thanks for the call. That's all. Start by showing a sign of wisdom. The phone number here is 1-800-4... See, I like that guy's laugh, because, look, we disagree on Bush, and we disagree on the Saudis, and blah, blah, blah. But at least at the end, he laughed. He didn't get angry, you know. And that's the important thing. As my father said in his my father had a little sign in his tiny little store. And it said, "Don't go away, Mayor, just go away."
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I don't have a way to begin this story other than to tell you I was on my bicycle before the show in one of my moods. I go in and out of moods and grousing about. I just read that there was a Russian in New York who bought a $150 million apartment, so I started to get mad. Grousing about that, saying I don't understand this world I'm living in. There are guys coming back from Iraq without legs and arms. And this guy has enough money to buy another $150 million apartment. Well, something's wrong with the picture here. So I said, look, I have a choice right now. I could sit here getting angry, or I get on my bicycle and take a 10-minute ride, because I remember that many years ago, 20 years ago, I read a couple of self-help books. And one of them said that in the few minutes that you're sitting there grousing about how bad things are, you can send a letter, make a phone call, run around the block. And you know what? It helped me then, and it helps me now. So I got on the bike and I went down to a kind of isolated area where they're building some new houses by the water, because I love to watch houses under construction. It's very optimistic to see the wood and the contractors and the this and the that. And I'm out by the point, and I'm coming back, and I see this big black Great Dane off a leash. Now, I happen to be afraid of black dogs. I mean, big black dogs. In fact, big white dogs. In fact, big dogs generally frighten me because I was bitten when I was young, right down to the bone, and had to be hospitalized. So I have a real respect for dogs. So I said, now I got to be very careful as I go by this Great Dane. I don't know whose it is. If I let out anger inside of me, the dog's going to feel it. If I let out fear, the dog's going to fear it. So I said, just be cool and go. Don't go too fast. Don't go. So I go by. The dog doesn't bother me. I said, thank God for that. Then I come upon a guy who's got a truck, who's doing auto detailing. And he's a big black guy. I've seen him once in a while. Huge. I mean, like a football-sized guy. And he comes out of the truck and he says to me, "You're looking good." And I said, "What?" He says, "You lose some weight?" And we start to talk. I didn't know the guy. I've seen him around. But he thought he knew me. He said he knew me. Not thought. He knew me for a number of years. He's been around this county doing cars. A great guy. I'm going to tell you the story now, where it goes. So one thing leads to another. And he says to me, "You remind me of another radio guy I knew." He says, "This guy was as smooth as can be. He could walk the ghetto, and he could walk the White House." So I said, "You know, let me tell you something." I said, "David, I grew up in New York City, and I had to learn how to swim with all kinds of fish. New York City was a very big fish tank. And if you didn't learn how to swim the right way, they'd tear your fins off." And he laughed. He says, "Well, they wouldn't just tear your fins off." He says, "They'd eat you for breakfast." And we started to talk. Now, he grew up in a black ghetto here in Marin County. There is one, and it was called Marin City. It's an interesting story unto itself. The housing was built by the magnate, Kaiser. When they were building Liberty ships in World War II, they needed to bring in workers, and they didn't bring them in from Mexico. They brought workers in from the South, and they were largely black people, and they built housing for them. And you may not know it, but many of the ship workers, you know about Rosie the Riveter, of course, but you didn't know that most of the Liberty ships were built by black people, particularly out here in Sausalito at the Kaiser shipyards. So the housing was built nearby, and it's become basically, largely a black community. And naturally, the way things have evolved in our society, and blame whoever you want, it hasn't been a picnic for the people living in there. So we were walking around, and well, we were just standing there talking about the dog and the this and the that. So I said, well, how did you come through that place and come out the way you are? You see, he's a pastor. In addition to running a service that, you know, polishes cars, he happens to be a minister. His name is Pastor David Hall. And I'm going to tell you more about that in a few minutes and where this went and how that went there and how positive this man was. And we were laughing. He says, you know, I know people around here, very rich people. He says, their children can't play with anybody. I said, why? He says, well, I told him the reason your kid can't play with anyone is because you've given them everything. They got all these toys. They sit in the house and they play electronic toys. They don't know how to play with anybody. I said, isn't that a shame? And I told him that I'm a people person, that I basically am not really alone, right? I don't really like to be alone. But I figured if I got out on the bike, I said I'd run into somebody to talk to. And I said, sure enough, this was like hitting, you know, the triple lottery for me in terms of the kind of person I am. It's like all four cherries came up on that big, you know, slot machine in the sky of humanity. And this goes back to what I told you a story years ago about me and Brother Billy down in Harlem when I was a kid. But that's a whole separate story. But this is going to lead somewhere else. So we're talking and this and that. We look up a hill where they're building the houses above where he's polishing the cars. And he says, ah, when I was a kid, he said, you know what we used to do for fun? I said, what? He said, we'd slide down the hill on like linoleum. I said, I can't believe it. I said, we did the same thing. I said, I lived in a tenement on a block called Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx. And above me was a hill called Bryan Avenue. Between us was a big empty woodlot that had a huge hill on it that was denuded of foliage. And we'd slide down it on oil cloth, you know, old linoleum. And I said, well, we'd also play war. He said, how'd that work? I said, well, we'd take the garbage can covers. We'd put them in our hands, and there'd be like a gang of us. I'm talking kids 5, 6, 7 years old. No one had guns or knives. And the game was to run up the hill against the other street as they were raining ash down upon us. And like Gladiator, bounce, bounce, bing, bing. And I said, my head would get split open 100 times in these things. I always had a knack. I don't know where the ash guys, you know what the ash is from? He says, no. I said, well, in those days, I said, they had garbage that they would burn in incinerators. And the leftover of that burn was like a volcanic ash. You know, thank God they don't do it anymore. And I said, these kids would get the ash out of the incinerator and rain it down upon us. And you'd have to fend it off. You can go home. You can get killed. So I said, many a time I'd come home with my head bleeding, with blood running down my head. I'd come home. My mother would faint before I got through the door. She was like a panic case. She'd go, oh, my God. And she'd fall on the floor basically screaming and yelling, I'm bleeding, and she's doing nothing. But I said, next door, I had an aunt who was like stoic, like Russian aunt. Nothing fazed this woman. She'd look at me with the sober face, get out the peroxide and bandage it up, and that was it. So he lit up, David did, and he says, when are you going to write that book? I was like, boom. I said, what? He said, when are you going to write that book? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, all those stories of your youth, he says, those are great stories. Well, we talked about so many different things. He said, I got to tell you, so I grew up on welfare. He said, my father left us when I was 5. He says, I'm one of 6 children. And he says, yeah, I ate the government cheese, he says with a big smile. He says, yeah, I grew up on the government cheese. And he says, I'd say to my mother, he says, Mom, if there's a God, why am I hungry? Now I said, oh, God, what a question. I said, kids are so smart. I said, they're brilliant. And he said, my mother told me, never be bitter, never be angry, always have faith. Now, this is the most important part of the story, is the faith that this man had. He didn't turn to bitterness. He didn't turn to anger. He didn't hate Whitey. He didn't hate America. He just did what he did, and he did it, and he did it, and he did it. And you know what? He's the richest man I've met in recent years. He is the wealthiest man I have ever met in the last 10 years. And I've met people with a lot of money. And I said, you know, you remind me of the story that Tolstoy wrote, The Kingdom of God is Within. I said, because you do emanate the goodness. He said, well, Michael, if you don't give anything back, you're going to be empty inside. And this man lives to give because he said in giving he gets love. Now, if this is not the epitome of what the Christian religion today is all about, I'd like to know what is. And so I guess the moral of the story is that the humanity in the other man can never be known until you have a contact with the other man. And, oh, I remember what a particular story before I go to the next spot got to him. I said, let me tell you a story. My dad owned a little store. And he had started on the streets of New York with a push cart. He came from the gutter. He was an immigrant with nothing. And he never really became a wealthy man. I said, but he had a little stall inside a store. And he sold first the used things. Then he sold some antique things. And he always made a living. We had a house and always food on the table. And I said, well, one day, I said, it was all white people in there. I said, never did you see anyone but white people in that market. Now, remember who I'm talking to now. I'm talking to a stranger who happens to be a black man, who happens to be, like, you talk about fullback football team, huge man. And we're just looking at each other and talking. So I said, it's an all-white store. In comes a black man, well-dressed. And I said, he says to my dad, how much is that? My father says, oh, a certain amount of money. How much is that? He's pointing at different statues. All right, how much is that? How much? He says, I'll take them all. So now the man leaves, writes him a check, and my father pulls me over, and he says, I want to tell you something, Michael. He says, listen to what just happened in this store, because it's a lesson you're going to learn for the rest of your life. I said, what's that? He says, never judge a man by the color of his skin. He said, you never know who the man is, you never know what the man is, and you never know what that man's all about until you have an interaction with him. So when I told it to a pastor, Pastor Hall, he says, that is a beautiful story. He says, you've got to tell that story. And so I've just told that story, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
I drive into the city, go to this Chinese restaurant. Now, for one, the parking is enough to give you indigestion if you get there, and it's terrible, just awful. That already gives you indigestion. There's no point in going. So I get there. I've eaten there for 20 years, and they still mistreat us. It's just that I don't know if it's a nature of the business. They don't like me. It's racism. I don't know what it is. I can't tell. I get in there. I order a number of dishes, and I'm meeting a friend, and they bring us immediately the pot stickers and the steamed dim sum within 5 minutes. I said, well, tonight's going to be different. Now I'm three beers into the meal, and there are no dishes, and everyone who came in after me is eating. Eight times I get up, where's the food? Then they bring it out, and the rice is at the end, and it was a mess, okay, a nightmare. I'm never going there again, but wait, the best is yet to come. My friend John, who's a philosophy professor, shows up a few minutes late, and he comes and he says, I had to park in a driveway around the corner. I hope I don't get a ticket. So right away, that's double anxiety. I don't blame him. There's no parking. Then he runs out 5 minutes later, and he puts a note in his windshield which says, please don't tell me. Call my cell phone number if you want me to move. Sure enough, in the middle of the meal, ring, ring. Oh, I'll be right out. I'll be right out. So I go out with him because John is a philosophy professor, and he's not street smart. I just had an instinct I better be with him. Sure enough, there's a crazed Russian in the street. He had parked not only in the guy's driveway but right against the guy's bumper, and the Russian is insanely mad, screaming and yelling. You have no brains, no brains, no brains, no brains, stupid, stupid, stupid brain, no brains. What, you have no brains? Why you parking my car? And he's crazy, he's livid. Now, I know how to defuse street situations, and John, the philosophy professor, doesn't know anything about this kind of interchange. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I'm trying to calm things down. I had had four beers already, so I said to him, look, tell you what. Just calm down. You have no brains. No. And he's screaming and yelling the Russian. No brains. Stupid. And he's in everyone's face. So I said, this could escalate, turn very bad. You know, guns, knives. You don't know what's going to. Crazy relatives from the Ukraine could come out with tattoos from jail. You don't know where this is going to go. I'm trying to defuse it. So I'm saying to my friend, look, back the car up. I said, if there's any damage, I will pay you. I figured money talks, right? I wasn't saying it was anyone's fault. No brains. I don't care. Damage. No brains. No brains. And he's on and on with the no brains. I said, look, my friend is a philosophy professor. I don't care. No brains. Why on my car? So I said, John, back the car up. John backs the car up, and there's no damage whatsoever. So the Russian gets down on his knees. And he says, no brains. Stupid. No brains anyway. I don't care. Damage. No damage. Stupid. No brains. So I said, look, is there damage? If there's damage, I'll pay. No brains, stupid! Stupid man! I said, look, is there damage? And I'm saying, John, get in the car and get out of here. I'm going to take care of it. Go! And John doesn't go. John sits there and starts in with the guy, I want to see you smile. I said, oh, my God. Now, the worst nightmare, you're telling an enraged Russian to smile? What does he think, this is a textbook in Marin County? He wants to see a smile out of an enraged Russian? He parked on his bumper. You know what that's like? That's like pulling out your private part and pressing it against his wife's jeans in the street. You know what I'm saying? All right, look. I understand people expose themselves when drunk in Russia, but you don't touch wife's pants with private park. You'll get killed for this. I mean, it's the equivalent of, what are you parking against the guy's bumper for? It's bad enough to be in the driveway, but if you're going to park there, you don't put it on the guy's bumper. It was like a new car and little, and it looks like the guy worked all his life for his first new car. And to him, this was like a sexual encounter. It's like, all right, in my country, I know they get drunk and they pull it out, but they don't touch wife's pants. It was like on that level of insanity, the guy parked against his car. So I said, get out of here. And he's out of the car telling the guy, I want to see you smile. I figure a relative is going to come out and say, what you say to my uncle? Smile? In Russia, the worst insult, tell him to smile when he's angry. I mean, to me, it looked like it was going to blow up into World War III. So I said to him, get in the car and get out of here. No, not here. So again, telling the guy that he didn't mean it and he wants him to smile. So I said to him, and the guy's screaming, I don't understand America. American people, stupid. Stupid American people. So I said to him, I looked him in the eye and I said, but you like America, don't you? See, I knew how to turn the situation because I know in Russia, a little bit about the Russian mind, which is that you can hate the person, but if you're a guest in another person's country, you don't hate the country because in his country, you get killed for hating someone else's country or your own country. I mean, he knows from his own reversal that through history, if you say you hated Poland, and there's a Polish man in the street drunk, he'll kill you. Or you see, you have to say, I hate you, but I like Poland. It's a strange kind of Slavic sense of humor that you have to understand how to defuse these things. He's stupid, friend, no brain. I hate Americans, stupid, don't understand them, but I love America. So it was like that kind of thing. Finally, it ended. So naturally, I'm never going to go back to that restaurant. That's all. You have to have been there. What I should have done is tape recorded this one. This would have been a beauty to have on tape recording.
Savage.
Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Indonesian woman jailed for almost cutting off her husband's penis over jealousy. A Malaysian court sentenced an Indonesian woman to prison for 6 months for almost severing her husband's penis out of jealousy, police said Wednesday. Umadat Setu, an Indonesian migrant worker living in Malaysia, pled guilty to court. Blah, 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 blah. Umada, a 47-year-old canteen operator, was arrested Sunday after her husband, who's also from Indonesia, filed a police report claiming she tried to cut off his penis with a knife. He received 11 stitches, blah, blah, blah. Muslim men in Malaysia are allowed to take up to four wives. It was not clear if Umada will... Four wives in Malaysia on the Muslim law? So what are they persecuting that poor guy in Utah for? I mean, he could have used the cultural defense if he wanted to. The dispute surfaced because Umida was jealous of another woman. Blah, 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 blah. Well, the guy's lucky that it occurred in Indonesia, not in Burma, because a Burma shave would have been closer. That's all I can say. It would have taken more than 11 stitches if he was in Burma. That's all.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Chicago, Illinois. Sandy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. I have a question. If you, your parents had you believe in Santa Claus, and if they did you feel bad when they, you know, when you found out it wasn't true?
I did believe in Santa Claus when I was a little kid. Without playing the Hearts and Flowers thing, we had a little apartment in the Bronx. We were poor. One bedroom. Everyone slept in it. The mother, the father, the three children, and the grandmother all slept in the bedroom, different beds. And there was a little so-called living room. And I wanted Christmas so badly that my mother put up a cardboard fireplace, if you can believe it. It's actually touching. It's heartbreaking. And she hung little stockings on it for Santa to fill. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the morning, you know, whatever money she had, she put candy cane or whatever in it. I believed in Santa. Then we would go to Macy's, Sandy, for Christmas, and there was Santa's there. I never liked them. I didn't like the breath on them. They always had, like, something coming out of their nose. And there were other things I didn't like. I didn't want to sit on Santa's lap. Let me put it to you that way. You can pretty much figure out why. I mean, even as a kid, the other kids, like, were idiots. They'd sit on Santa's lap. I didn't. And when my turn came, I would, like, squirm out of it. My mother would say, why don't you want to sit on Santa's lap? Look at the other children. They're sitting on his lap. I said, no thanks, Ma. There's something about, you know, Santa's clothing that doesn't look right to me, Mom. So, you know, you're asking what happened when I found out there is no Santa?
Mm-hmm.
I discovered girls.
Oh.
Thanks for the call. Houston, Texas. Jason, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I just wanted to thank you for sharing that wonderful ideal that your mother had. To me, memories are the most important thing in the world, and I'm already on my way to get the cardboard to make a fireplace right now.
Are you serious? You're pulling my leg.
No, sir. That's a wonderful idea. I wish I'd have thought of it.
Well, I'm not making it up. We were poor. We lived in an apartment without a fireplace. She wanted me to have, like, a nice Christmas Eve. She actually had a cardboard mantle with fake bricks. I don't know how. I think she bought. They did make them. In other words, she didn't paint it. I think they sold them for assemblage in poor people's apartments. And she hung stockings on it.
It's a beautiful act of love. And
it is.
You know,
she was a great woman. She was a wonderful person. I miss her every day.
Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Well, the guy means it. Would you believe it? In a world that we live in with such cynicism, a guy calls me and actually believes what he just said? How do you like that? You like that? See, people think everyone's cynical and nasty, and they're all from Hollywood. Your kid has to have a fantasy. Do you know that? You know, adults need fantasy, too. You think you can't live with it? I don't care how pragmatic or... Let's say you're one of these people who says, oh, you know, I'm a nose to the grindstone. I'm a pragmatist. I'm a realist. I will bet you that you spend a certain portion of your day in fantasy, whatever it may be. I don't know what that fantasy is. But the thing that distinguishes man, I think, from other animals, although we can't be sure they don't fantasize as well, one of the things that distinguishes us from other animals is certainly the fact that we have a divine soul. That's a given. But in terms of cognitive activities, I would say that man's ability to fantasize is one of his most human attributes. Do you understand that? It doesn't necessarily mean fantasize in the way that you would assume I mean, you know, in that the prurient sense. You can fantasize in any other way. My children will be, I'm fantasizing when I am retired, what you're going to do, you know, that type of thing. But many of us fantasize in the negative. You know, you're afraid of getting sick and old. That's fantasy too. Those are negative fantasies, envisioning yourself sick and old or what it's going to be like dead. Or whatever the negatives may be. Those are fantasies, too. And the trick is to control the negatives and convert them into positives. Very hard to do. The greatest challenge of mankind is to convert the negative fantasies into the positive. I struggle with it every day. But no matter how well I do at night, I have nightmares. So what are you going to do? That's what nightmares are for. You're supposed to have them at night so you don't waste the days. May as well have them at night while you're sleeping. That way, during the day, you don't have to have negative thoughts. Save it for at night so you thrash all night. And you wake up unrefreshed from a bad night's sleep. Oh, did I have nightmares last night? And I know why, too. It was that rotten calamari. Finally, that's it. I'm through with it. I'm through with that animal. I've been reading on the restaurant blogs that people are getting screwed in restaurants now with seafood. It's old. They're complaining that the restaurants are serving it 2-3 days old. Oh, they finally found out they're serving it 2-3 days old. You must be joking. Well, I ate it at home. I had gotten frozen and this and that, defrosted it. It just gave me nightmares. I'm better off pure vegetarian lately. Much better off. Much better off. Rice and beans would be a good diet. But I'm going to – I don't have as bad dreams with no animal product. And no animal product, I sleep better. You know which animal gives me the worst nightmares? Lamb. If I eat any kind of lamb at night, oh, I gave it up 15 years ago. Somehow, like, the animal's blood in my – The sinew in my head, the poor animal screaming and crying. But leave me alone with that. I don't want the karma. But if you get down that road, then what can you eat? Even a plant wants to live. You think the apple wanted to be picked? You want to get crazy now? The apricot wanted to be picked off the tree? The wheat wanted to be harvested? I mean, you can go crazy from it all. You can become a Jain from India, J-A-I-N. They walk around waving a fan in front of their face so they don't inhale sentient creatures they can't see, like a bug in the air. You hear? You want to become like that? Then go work for Obama.
Savage.
I was laying in bed last night about 3 in the morning when I started to laugh out loud. And I rarely laugh out loud in bed because it would disturb the dog who'll think I'm crazy. And I started to laugh hysterically because the thought occurred to me that when I was a youth and still living with my parents, maybe 17, 16, 17 era, I left pretty young, I don't know when I left, 20. I have no idea when. I remember coming home after a night of carousing with my friends. Well, frankly, I remember coming home to that little attached brick house with the rock-solid front door and turning that lock. There's something about that door. I've never been able to duplicate the doors they had on houses in those days and the locks. When you turn the tumbler on those houses, you heard the tumbler turn. You felt like Willie Sutton breaking into a bank. It was such a wonderful sound. And the minute the door opened, mothballs and heat assailed all of your senses. My mother kept the heat up at around, I'd say, 90 in the winter. And she put mothballs in every article of clothing known to me, and like the whole closet. You got to picture this house, an attached house, so to speak, semi-attached, right, brick, a row house, in other words. Think of a British movie from the 50s. Remember those movies, brick-attached houses? Now think Queens, 50s, post-war attached houses. Small, maybe 20 feet wide, the lot's 100 feet long, the house is maybe, what, 20 by 60, the yard's 40, front and rear, I don't really know. But the house was narrow, but it worked for me. It was like, to me, a palace after where we had come from. And when I got in that, so mothballs were in every clothing bag, but more than the clothing bags. In the hallway when you went in, and so hallway, you had to walk in sideways into the vestibule. But to me, it was wonderful. I didn't care it was a small hallway. At least I had a hallway. To the immediate right of the hallway was a closet door. She had mothballs in there. Every piece of clothing and a vacuum cleaner to go with it. Everything was neat. Don't get me wrong. Nothing was jumbled. But in every coat, a mothball. The woman had, God bless her, she had a phobia about bugs. I don't know what it was. To keep the fur. I don't know what. But I used to say, my, it's so hot in here. My eyes are smarting from the mothballs. Never mind, I like the heat. That was the end of the discussion. There was no discussing it at that point. She would have been great in talk radio, my mother. She closed the argument down just by answering what you started to say. There was no discussion. Never mind, I like the heat. That was it. There was no arguing, no reasoning. Perfect caller to a radio show. Actually, perfect host. But what was this thing with the mothballs? I don't understand. I'm starting to think there may have been a health benefit to mothballs that we don't even understand yet. That's when I broke into laughter in bed, and Teddy rolled over and looked at me like I was crazy. Play Jingle Bell Rock, would you?
Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock. Jingle Bell Swing.
I'm not going to get too wound up today, much.
Snowing and blowing.
I'm not going to get too wound up today, not.
Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell.
Seen the pictures of me yet? That's a great picture with the sunglasses. If I didn't have the brains I have, I would have been a movie star. Holy, that's a great line. You know, I'm looking at myself, how good looking I really was at my birthday, which wasn't too long ago. If I didn't have the brains I was gifted with, I would have been a movie star by now. And just think of what you would have lost. Indianapolis, Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Your Mama Savage was onto something with the mothballs. She probably never saw a mouse or anything in her house as long as she kept those mothballs going.
She hated mice. She was terrified of them. But she was trying to kill the moths. How did she kill the mice?
One of the chemicals in the mothballs, apparently, because my mother and my grandmother did the same thing. They never had mice in their house, and according to a home remedies book that my mother had, the mothballs, one of the chemicals in them, is a deterrent to mice.
You're kidding. She was terrified of mice. She was a strong woman and not very frightful, but terrified of mice. And I remember once we were in a rented cottage in the mountains, and a mouse got in the cottage. There were no mothballs there because she primarily used them in the in the house we lived in. She didn't have any up in the mountains. And, man, she jumped up on a chair screaming with a broom at the mouse. Why are women afraid of mice? I don't want to go into it. I'm sorry. This is going to start the... Anyway, thanks for the call. I got the picture. I don't want to go into it.
Savage.
To me, religion teaches peace and getting along with your fellow man and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I have never encountered in my life a religion that teaches to hate other religions, and to kill people who don't follow that religion. And by definition, one day we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that such a definition may not include this religion as practiced by too many adherents in this country and in other Western countries. It cannot stand. We will not survive if we permit people to believe that their religion is the only religion, and other religions must be annihilated, and people who practice those other religions must be converted or killed. It's incompatible with our existence. And by definition, those are not religious teachings. They are political, homicidal teachings. And one day, we're going to have a leadership with the guts to outlaw such teachings. As sure as I'm sitting here, it's coming. It has to come, or this country will disappear. I have studied the story of the great days of the Arabs. And it is one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the whole history of the human race. They smashed the Byzantine army at the Battle of Yarmouk, a tributary of the Jordan River, in 634. And I'm not going to go through the entire list of countries that they conquered. But you must understand that the Arabs conquered Persians and converted the Persians to Islam. You may not know that, but the Persians were not always Islamic. They conquered Syria. They conquered Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and converted them to Islam, or large elements of the population went over to Islam. And then the Persians went over to Egypt, I believe, and they had a great host with a great force of elephants, and they won. They conquered Persia, as I said. The Muslim Empire kept pushing into western Turkestan and pushing eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell to the Muslims almost without resistance to the new conquerors, who were driven by a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of the Quran. They were ignoramuses. They read nothing. They hated the written word in any other form. And they wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library that they found in Egypt. They burnt it to the ground. They then poured along the north coast of Africa, and they entered the Straits of Gibraltar and Spain. The Muslim invaders invaded Spain in 710. They crossed the Pyrenees Mountains in 720. In 732, the Arab advance had reached the center of France. They threatened to take over all of France. But finally, the Arab advance was stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and thrust back as far as the Pyrenees again. It was only through fighting that the French retained their civilization whatsoever. Now, I don't have the time to go into these early years of the Arabs and the conquest in these 25 years, but you should know that in 25 years, the Muslim Empire expanded greatly across Persia, Persia at that time, Iran today, Arabia, Egypt, and as I said, almost conquered a good portion of Europe itself. But they didn't kill everybody. This is the interesting part. The maniacs today, the little men with beards today, are actually worse than the early Arab conquerors. This throwback, these throwbacks that we're seeing today in Hezbollah, for example, are not representative of the Arab today. They're not even representative of the Arab of 1,000 years ago. Because when the Arab conquered these other countries, they didn't kill everybody. We can talk about some of the murders if you want. But we should talk about the effect upon the human mind and the general destinies in those nations. The Arab intelligence, never forget, was a great intelligence. And the Arab intelligence that entered these other countries was flung across the world even more swiftly and dramatically than the Greeks had entered 1,000 years before. They stimulated the intellect of the whole world west of China. They broke up old ideas and developed new ones, and it was an enormous advancement for mankind. In fact, when the Muslim Arab mind entered Spain, it discovered an active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion, and it integrated, it pollinated, and they worked together. In Central Asia, the Arab mind met Buddhism and the material achievements of Chinese civilization. The Arabs learned the manufacture of paper, which made printed books possible. Who? From? From the Chinese. And finally, the Arabs came into contact with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And what happened as a result of these interactions was the intolerant self-sufficiency of the early days of faith, which made the Quran seem the only possible book, was dropped. And suddenly, a renaissance occurred. Learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. And so by the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the entire Arabized world. And I'm going to pause right there. What we have here are people who are actually pre-8th century, some of them calling this show. Here they are living in the United States of America, the most advanced civilization in the world has ever known. Instead of pollinating and integrating with this world, they continue to disseminate the hatred of the 7th century. Because by the 8th century, the Arab conquerors had created educational organizations, and learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of these Arab conquerors. But here in America, we have throwbacks teaching the most ignorant, the most homicidal people in this country that the 7th century is the century to live in, and people who do not practice their religion are less than human, and they must either be converted or you know what else. And so we have a real problem on our hands. But again, I want to remind you that by the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were writing and corresponding with learned men in Cairo, Baghdad, Bukhara, and Samarkand. The Jewish mind and the Arab mind assimilated very well together, and for a time the two Semitic races worked very beautifully together through the language of Arabic. They didn't kill each other. The Arabs didn't kill the Jews. And I'm talking the 9th century. In the 9th century, these throwbacks in the Palestinian world and the Hezbollah are actually a throwback beyond the 9th century, whether you know it or not. And long after the political breakup and the weakening of the Arabs, the intellectual community of the Arab-speaking world actually endured. Unfortunately, it's died by today. But it was still producing considerable results in the 13th century. But we have people in the Arab world today who are living before the 13th century, as I told you. All you have to do is study some of the history. All you have to do is look at the Museum of Alexandria that they burned to the ground in the 7th century. All you've got to do is look at the wonderful things that the Arab mind gave the world. The clumsy Roman numerals, as you know, were thrown out by the Arabic figures that we use to this day. Many of the ignoramuses who call the show, who say that they're experts in the Quran, don't even know that the Arabic numbers that they're using replaced the Roman numerals. They don't even know who Rome was or what the Roman numerals were. The Arabs gave us the zero sign. The very name algebra is Arabic. So was the word chemistry. The names of such stars as Algol, Aldebaran, and Boots preserve the traces of Arab conquests of astronomy in the sky. And so they reanimated the medieval philosophy of France and Italy and the whole Christian world. So the Arabs were a great contribution to world civilization. And you must understand that they also gave us very great advances, although there was barbarism amongst them. They gave us great advances in metallurgy and technology, alloys, dyes, distilling, tinctures and essences, optical glass, were all discovered by Arab scientists. Of course, they were looking for the elixir vitae, a stimulant that would keep people living forever and prolong life indefinitely. But that's okay. That's what drove them. It drives many of us today. I understand that. The bottom line of what I'm telling you is that the Arab mind, the Muslim mind, had integrated with the world, even the worlds that it had conquered, and was getting along with them by the 8th and 9th century. And yet, we have people who have called this show who are reflecting the mind of the 7th century Muslim.
Savage.